This is the Bates Bobcast, our weekly podcast where we take a look at the week that was in Bates Athletics. My name is Aaron Morse, and for the summer months on the Bobcast, we are taking a trip down memory lane with student-athletes from the past. This week, we chat with the greatest jumper in Bates Athletics history, John Douglas from the class of 1960. That's coming up on the Bates Bobcast. Along with classmate Rudy Smith, John Douglas starred for the Bates men's track and field team in the late 1950s. Bates became a regional powerhouse during his time in Lewiston, at one point defeating 31 opponents in a row over the course of 21 meets between 1957 and 1959. Douglas competed in numerous events for the Bobcats, and his name is still number one in the Bates record books in both the indoor and outdoor long jump, as well as the outdoor triple jump. His indoor record long jump of 25 feet 0.75 inches took place during his junior year in 1959 at Madison Square Garden, with Jesse Owens, yes, that Jesse Owens, officiating. Later that same year, representing Bates in the segregated South, he set the program outdoor long jump record of 25 feet, 1.5 inches. Both jumps also established New England records at that time. During Douglas's years as a Bobcat, the men's track and field team won the state championship every year except 1959, when Douglas missed the meet due to injury. After graduating in 1960 with a degree in physics, Douglas went on to have a remarkable career, working for the likes of Lockheed Research Laboratories, Bank of America, and Dole Foods. Then he became a media mogul, starting his own television station and purchasing a number of radio stations as well. Douglas served as a Bates trustee from 1995 to 2000, and he still owns and operates numerous radio stations. And today, John Douglas joins the Bobcast. Go back to when you were in high school. What were you looking for in the college? What made you decide to come up to Maine to go to school at Bates?
It was somewhat accidental. I have an older sister who's 6 years older than I, and she got married, and I was going into high school, and I remember the wedding and all these guys. They were cool, and you know, they had their act together, and I said, gee, it's pretty neat. I gotta get into college. And I found out that she ended up going to Boston University, so I started checking around, and I also had a physics teacher, Mrs. Francis, who at the end of the year, she went around the room and asked, okay, you know, what do you want to be, what do you want to do, and so forth. And so I told her I want to be an accountant. She said, oh, no, no. She stopped the class. Like what the town was like, and so forth and so on.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you played, what, 1 year of football, and then after that focused exclusively on track, or how did that kind of go for you?
Yeah, I just played the 1 year, and I was an end. The high school I went to was a very good high school in Englewood, New Jersey, and in that same town was a Catholic school. And the former coach of the Catholic school used to be Vince Lombardi. Huh. So, needless to say, the final game on Turkey Day between the public school and the Catholic school was always a winner. And I remember playing in that, and it was a fascinating game. And I also remember at halftime, this guy comes up to me, and he comes over and shakes my hand, and he said, "You know, hey, you're doing a good job." And during the summers, I used to cut grass. My dad had a quote-unquote landscaping situation, and I was his grass cutter. And the guy turned out to be Jim Lee Howell, who was the coach of the New York Football Giants. So every weekend I was cutting his grass and didn't really realize it. And so I introduced him to our coach, and our coach almost fainted. But, you know, that told me that, wow, maybe this is going to be all right.
At Bates, what caused you to decide you wanted to focus on track and field, I guess?
In physics, I also did a lot of studying. In fact, I was a assistant lab instructor, so, you know, I'd show the students, you know, well, this is this and this is why and so on. And obviously one of the things that you learn very quickly, you learn all about gravity and force and all kinds of things associated. So it didn't take a great genius to figure out the faster you go and the higher you go, the further you go. So that's what I ended up playing around with. And we were in the old cage. So the old cage, you can only go for so far in a straight line. So I had to learn how to run down the runway, make a sharp right turn. Didn't have my indicator lights on, but make a sharp right turn and then jump. So it wasn't one of those things where, oh, it's a piece of cake. No, it took some figuring. And but it was also a lot of fun. Walt Savinsky, the coach then, was a character in his own. And he could really talk to anyone and really make them believe that they were good. So my first big meet was we were going down to the place down in Boston, the gardens there. And so I was running on the relay team. So as a freshman, my first big meet. And I said, oh, please don't drop the baton, you know, all the things that go through your mind. We also had Rudy Smith, who you probably heard about. He was something. So we had two freshmen, myself and Rudy, and then two seniors. And the crowd just went crazy when we had the thing. And I guess when I passed it off, the next guy did fantastic, and then he passed it off to Rudy, and Rudy just like, wow. So I kept saying, boy, this is all right. I think I'm going to like this place. And it was fun just being my first really big-time meet.
You touched on Walt Savinsky. Give me some top, maybe a couple of top stories you remember about Walt that really kind of summarizes who he was as a coach and as a man, in your opinion.
Yeah, Walt is a ex, I think he was a Marine or something. He was in the services somehow, so he went to school either, well, I think it was in Syracuse, some one of those schools. So he was one of those guys that this, but then he'd get up and try to do it, and more than half the time he'd succeed. So he was a great role model, and he also was a lot of fun. On the trips that we used to take, you know, if it was a bigger event, then we all pile into Walt's car. The bad thing about Walt is, as you're driving along, let's say on the Jersey, on the main turnpike, he'll be turning around talking to you. I'm like, just follow the road, especially as we got into New York. But he got us there, and it was also, he would tell you about, you know, some of the athletes we were competing against, and especially when you got to the bigger meets, like in Madison Square Garden, the guy I was jumping against was the guy who won the Olympics, you know, the last Olympics, and it's kind of like, okay, this is going to be a little tricky, and then, and then also the guy who was doing the measurements in terms of distance was Jesse Owens, who, you know, had been a great sprinter and broad jumper back in the days when the Germans had the Olympics. And so just to get to meet him was just, you know, it was drilled out of my mind. And I remember at the time he had the world record too. So I figured maybe I could kill two birds with one stone. But I did fairly well on that. I ended up tying for first. But he was the life. Well, obviously after the meet, I stayed around and talked to him one on one. It was just it's a thrill that you know you're gonna come down, but while you're up there, it's just, yeah, I like this. And it was also interesting, there was a guy when I was in high school who made the Olympic team in the triple jump, and he used to practice at our high school stadium. And we got to know him, but, you know, hey, he was an Olympian. And that same meet when Jesse Owens was doing the measurements, this guy, George Shaw, was jumping in the triple jump, but he was jumping in the long jump competition, and I beat him, and again, that was one of those, I think I better stop while I'm ahead. it was a great, great sensation. If you're an athlete, that's, you know, it kind of drives you on. Wow, this is really something. And that's sort of what happened at Bates. Bates, they give you enough encouragement, and yet you have encouragement to really just figure out, hey, I can do this, or let me try this. And so it was a fantastic area. In fact, one guy, in fact, the German professor, Herr Buschmann, even one day came and said, here's a ticket. This is the ticket I used when Jesse Owens set the records, and I was in the stadium in Toronto, and I said, wow. And so he gave me the ticket, and I was like, this is unbelievable. And that was above and beyond the normal call of duty. So, you know, he ended up knowing everybody, and everyone knew you. And so it was a good place, super place. And Walt was the biggest cheerleader you could possibly have.
Well, I know you went to Ruth Slavinsky's 90th birthday party a few years back. So obviously you were very close with that whole family. What was that dynamic like?
Oh, it was fantastic. And I remember quickly, I had a nice present for her. And she's just a super nice person. She would clip out and save all the clippings and all that, and, you know, present them to me on a periodic basis. She always, you know, she's just super. And I guess being married to Walt, you know, you had to be able to handle pressure, because Walt was always moving in a fast pace, let's put it that way.
Rudy Smith, you touched on him. He was known as the Fairfield Flash, broke some records at he still stands today, and as did you. But, I mean, were you two pretty close? I mean, same class, setting records together. What was that relationship like?
It was very close, and I enjoyed Rudy because he too was not one of those guys that, I'm the baddest guy in New England. No, he was down to earth. Went to I think it was Fairfield High School, and so it wasn't one of the big name places. And you know, going to Bates was not what you call like going to Ohio State or something. No, it was just a small place. But when we both got up there, we found out we both enjoyed track, and I was amazed at him. He was like unreal, and he was too going against a lot of the Olympians. So you get, and also more importantly, you get to know these guys. And I remember getting postcards from a guy who won the decathlon in the Olympics. And yeah, it's just it was not just cutthroat. I'll get you any way I can. No, it was sort of like everybody's just having a good time. But you know, yeah, we're in a competition and we want to do our best, and we will do our best. But we're also going to enjoy life.
Certainly. Well, I read here Mike Herman, though, NYU, kind of your nemesis. Is that right? What was that?
That was a guy who, if it was a guy I could trip and he just sprained his ankle or something, that would have been wonderful. That would have been the tag the same. He tied in more events in the long jump. And even at Madison Square Garden, you expect, we tied for first. And it was the first time they used the rule, the second best will be awarded second, where the other person is first. So ended up second in that. And, but Mike was, he was like a decathlon type person. And went to NYU had this "I'm gonna win" thing, and yet he was a nice guy. And I used to see him at almost all the big meets, so it was fun.
What was it like competing at Madison Square Garden? I mean, it's the most famous arena in the world, right? I mean, what was that experience like? And especially being somewhat close to where you grew up, I suppose, right?
Yeah, but, first of all, I didn't know where Madison Square Garden was. I knew it was in New York. New York's big. and yet, you get the newspapers and so on. And my mom, who lived in Englewood, New Jersey, which is just across the Hudson River. She used to save every article. So if there was something in the New York Times or something in this paper or that paper. And so it was definitely fun. And in fact, I still have it in the large path. It's says competitors' path. So that allowed you to get in on the floor of Madison Square Garden. And I remember looking up, and I think it held, or at least there were about 15,000 people there. And I remember seeing these red dots. There were all these guys smoking cigars. And it's you had this haze of smoke, and then these red dots all over the place. But that didn't really stop you. It was more important just to be there. And also, your warm-up, you had to think, now, I got to really warm up, yet I have to look somewhat cool, like I know what I'm doing. And, you time jog and do some stretching and so forth. And then when it comes time for the meet, I used to run hurdles also, high hurdles. And you look down the line and you say, oh my goodness, this is really, really kind of scary. But it was a lot of fun. It also made you a good competitor, period, no matter what you do.
What does it mean to you that your long jump record you set at Bates at Madison Square Garden in 1959 still stands today. How cool is that?
Well, it just means that they can't jump. In fact, what was his name? I think it was Thomas, the first guy to high jump 7 feet. He was jumping around at the same time, and everyone was just amazed at his ability. And so what you found out is you try to find a niche, and try to find a technique that's, you know, you can't patent it, but you can make it so that, okay, this works, and let's fine-tune this, let's fine-tune that. But everybody then knew you, and it was a publication, Road and Track, what we used to get, which was nationwide, and it would give, on a weekly basis, who did what, who was in what meets, and blah, blah, blah. And that was always fun, because, you know, you just peek in Walt's office, and well, you see your name listed, you know, okay, you may not be ranked number one that particular week, but you're always in the hunt. And I think even more so is when you start getting papers like the Boston Globe and the New York Times and the Washington Post and so on. Near sports thing, mentioning your name and putting something in there, that's a thrill, and it's hard to get over, and it also makes you competitive when you get out of Bates and get into the real world, and you just got to say to yourself, well, this is it. This is your equivalent of Madison Square Garden, but it's an office building.
Right.
So, and you go from there.
Tell me what it was like competing in the cage with the dirt floor back then. big crowds, I understand, right? A lot of people came out to support. What was that like?
Yeah, it was, well, first of all, the balcony was the place. And so people would be upstairs on the balcony, and you know, you keep looking up there and saying, you know, I hope that this thing is earthquake proof, you know. you're running underneath that balcony for the most part, at least for half the year, if you're going around the thing. And likewise, if you're running the hurdles, you just diagonal, you know, in. It's almost like you're playing baseball because it's a dirt type floor, and I remember I played middle league, and this was over in Jersey, and I was on the all-star team in Jersey, and we had a chance to play in the Polo Grounds.
Oh wow!
And so that kind of reminded me of the Polo Grounds. It was dirt, and I remember seeing Willie Mays one time, and so I kind of knew, or at least the young lady that he was going with, got introduced to him, and you know, I said, by the way, you know, if you were such a game, and I didn't want to tell her, but I said, you know, you were relaxing and so forth. He said, yeah. And he said, yeah, I used to read the comic books, and that's what I thought he was reading. But yeah, and then we started talking about the guy who was the umpire, and the catcher seemed like, you know, they were like the Empire State Building. It was so big. And it was just a lot of fun talking with him. And you find out that people are down to earth and, and very real. We had, this was probably definitely one of the highlights. There was a guy, maybe you know the name, Gene Washington, who was on the 49ers. He was tight end. He went to Stanford, and I got to know him somewhat at Stanford. But one day he said, hey, can we use your house for a meeting? He said, we have a whole bunch of folks from out of town coming in, and we don't want to have it necessarily on campus. Bill Walsh was the coach, formerly of Stanford and then obviously the 49ers. And he just wants to, you know, have maybe 20 or so, 30 people. And they said, don't worry, we'll pick up the tab, you know, have it catered. So I said, okay, well, you know, who's going to be there? Well, he said, Bill Walsh. Bill Walsh, former Super Bowl champion coach Bill Walsh. And I said, yeah. I said, yeah, well, we'll have a bunch of cars or a van pull us up. And sure enough, you know, you open the door, and there's Bill Walsh. And you go to say something, and your mouth starts moving, but nothing comes out because you're still, you know, wow. And what had happened was he was trying to help minority coaches and give them pointers on how to get from the either the lower college level or the high school level up to being in the NFL or what have you. And so he didn't hold punches. He was playing around. And they had people who did go on. I remember Tyone Willingham was there, and he eventually went to Notre Dame and was the coach, and I guess the University of Washington. So that was like, I have a football sitting in my next room where we are now. So if you're out here, that would be the next thing I would show you.
Yeah.
You got to see this. You know? But that's the way really good athletes are. They're just really down to earth. And they're super, but they're just nice people, neat people.
Going back to Bates a little bit, I read in your bio, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but apparently you failed your first physics test at Bates, and that gave you a bit of a wake-up call. Tell me about the academic adjustment there.
Yeah, I decided, I was saying, should I unpack or should keep my stuff packed? Yeah, that wasn't one of the faster starts, but obviously, I finally got my act together, and then, you know, once I got to it, as I said, the high school coach, Ms. Francis, was super, and I got so much out of her in terms of, physics and what have you, and encouraged me to go into that or engineering, and in fact, it was kind of a toss-up between Bates and Michigan State. Bates went out, and it was because of, I like challenges. I love competition. And I also like learning new things, and physics was kind of all of that. So it was good.
Excellent. And then, so upon graduating from Bates, you went to Howard and got a master's there, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Howard, I went for my master's and got that. And it was nice because I had my own lab there.
Mm.
And so that worked out very nicely. And I remember I had a job offer from Lockheed Research Labs in Palo Alto. And again, I was sophisticated, but wasn't that sophisticated. You know, they made an offer, and I just immediately said, I'll take it. At the time, getting money like that was like, wow, okay. So, the next stop was all the way cross country to Palo Alto, and that was like being in a track meet, because the people you meet, they're trying to be the best in their fields, and you got competition up the yin yang, and yet it was fun because Yeah, it's competitive, but you're learning so much. When I was at Lockheed, I was pretty good at math. I took, during summers, I took an advanced calculus course at Columbia.
Oh.
And then at Fairleigh Dickinson, I took a differential equations course. So I was pretty heavy on the on that side.
I'm curious, going back to Bates for a moment. So you graduated in 1960. The Bates student article I found talking about you and Rudy Smith as the two athletes of the year that year, it says that you and Rudy were both possibly going to go to the Olympic trials in California in June.
Yeah.
Did that end up not happening? Or I couldn't find any record of whether you went or not, so I wanted to ask about that.
It did not happen. It had been planned on happening. We were obviously going to fly out with Walt.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to be at University of Cal Berkeley, their stadium. That's where all the trials were. And never happened. It was a shame because I think, we had a good chance of at least putting a good showing and maybe even making the team. But didn't happen.
Do you remember why, or I mean, just?
No, I'm trying to think of.
Yeah, no worries.
Something that was fairly, fairly important, but I'm not sure what it was. Because graduation went off, without any hitches or anything. But maybe it was associated with graduation.
Mm.
Because I can remember, God, like a day or two before the graduation ceremony, the dean of faculty came up to me and said, John, I want to talk to you. Oh, gosh. Yeah, what do you want? And turns out I had the highest score on the exam on those exams you use for getting into grad school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the math part, I just, I was getting to be really good at that, so it turned out, and taking all those courses outside of Bates in math was perfect, so that was close, because they approved it and said, yeah, definitely can go, and it was all set. And we also had one other meet down in at Quantico
right.
Relays, and that was also good, because that was my first time in the South, in the segregated South, and but yet that was. They had a guy pick me up at the airport. He flew into Washington, and he had on his dress uniform. And remember, he had been shuttling athletes back and forth. And so he was beat, and he said, can we just stop? I mean, I need to get something, just a snack, and to be on our way. So we go to a place, and he said, we don't serve blacks here, and I didn't worry, because hey, they messed with my man here. But we ended up eating in the car and continued on the road. But that was my first meeting, and then they put me in with a guy from Michigan State. As my roommate, and I remember midway through, he said, we're gonna take some time on our way back just to do a drive by Howard University, and we did. And you saw all these young ladies waving out of the window, and I said, I like that school. It's cool. But the bottom line was, it was fun. It was fun, and it was exciting, and the challenge was good. And in fact, even at Lockheed, I had been playing the stock market, it didn't work out at first. And I was saying, I know my equations are good. I know I'm, blah, blah, blah. And I finally got things. And there was an article in Barron's one time about write your own ticket. It was about security analysts. And I started reading about security analysts. And I said, well, that sounds pretty interesting. So there was an ad in the newspaper, in the San Francisco newspaper. And so I called the headhunter and, I said, I'd be interested in, that. I said, well, why don't you come on up and, we'll talk about it. And, it's with the Bank of America. And so I remember going up and going to his office, and he looked at me and he said, oh, no. He said, they don't have any black folks. I said, but, I said, well, that's, I said, but, we'll send you over there. And, wish you luck. But I can remember meeting the people and all the stuff, and it was like, I think they probably took a vote. But anyway, they gave me a job offer, and that was my first recommendation. Turned out to be to sell Lockheed stock.
Oh.
And it turned out to be a beautiful recommendation, right? So all of a sudden word spread. The financial district in greater San Francisco is not that big. So I had a lot of offers, and I remember Mutual Fund asked me to come over, and they were willing to double my salary. And I'm like, well, see, I can be packed in about 10 minutes and I can leave. And so I went with a Mutual Fund, and again, it was the competitive thing. And that's one thing I liked about the stock market in general, and what have you, is very competitive.
So many parts of your career, you went from Silicon Valley to Wall Street to radio, to television, to radio, back to TV. All these
food company.
Yeah, a food company, right? All these varied experiences. How do you feel like maybe Bates prepared you for? I mean, I bet you didn't have any idea you'd have this type of career graduating, when you did there in 1960. But how do you feel like Bates prepared you for all this?
Well, Bates, as you know, it's a liberal arts school, and it teaches you how to think, and also just as important as to how to meet people, how to interact, how to be able to come face to face with situations which are strange to you, but they had to start somewhere and look at where they are now and that kind of stuff. So liberal arts school is great. My son graduated from Berkeley, and he majored in Russian. Okay. And yet, he helped out on what we're doing here in the radio side. But you never know where it's going to take you, and that's why Bates and schools like Bates, Bowdoin, the whole Tufts, are good liberal arts schools, and really prepare you more than you think. And it gets to a point where you're actually looking for the challenge, and you're excited when you do get the challenge, and then you make it happen. I remember my first big deal was buying the radio stations, and we got Prudential to finance it for us, and it was $25 million. And I remember the closing, because you don't realize it, but your hands are sweaty, and visions of, okay, I wonder when the next flight to the Bahamas is or something. But you get this. you're in a race, and you can see the tape, and all I have to do is just lean in and it'll flow, and then I'll be in first, and, you know, and that's exactly how it is.
Awesome. Well, I guess any other thoughts you wanted to share about your time at Bates we haven't gotten to talk about? I know the Maine State meet was a big deal, and it still is a big deal, but you got to compete against like University of Maine and stuff like that, but and the rivals in the area. Do you have recollections of those meets also?
Yeah, I remember it because typically that was when, you know, you had to perform your best. And I remember one in particular, it was, for some reason, it was fairly early in the season, in the start of the track season. And that was one which I was jumping, and I jumped, and I landed in the pit. And the pit wasn't really dug up. And so it was hard, almost like an ice. And that's when I hurt my knee, and that's when I couldn't go to the Olympic trials because of that one jump. So, yeah, I remember the track meets, and you just have to, again, things happen, and sometimes you just have to, you know, shake them off, and sometimes things happen for a reason, and you have to make the best out of them. So
the Olympic trials, it was because you were battling an injury then, 19...
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. Because, that was definitely one in which I was going to at least try to make the team, and felt I had a halfway decent shot at making the team.
I did want to go back to Rudy Smith real quick. What was it like watching him run? Because I feel like I've heard stories like from reading about how he was just incredible. Like, what was it like for you watching him go?
I always knew that once Rudy got on the track, he was going to close on whoever, and he was going against, dead set against some of the Olympic guys who won the Olympics, and he would start off fairly quickly, but he wouldn't waste too much energy, and then he'd drop back. It's almost like he was one of the racetracks for cars. He would just follow around, and then he shifted in a gear, and it's just like the same form, same everything, except it's being done a lot faster. And you realize that he's going really fast. And then when the competitors, you know, you'd always have some competitors at the end, realize what was happening, their recovery, they just couldn't catch him. They could maybe tie him at best, but not outright, just kill him. So, and keep in mind, he was, you know, I guess he was, what, a junior then when he was doing that. But anyway, he was not what you call one of those, oh, I've been running track ever since, you know. No, and Rudy is a really nice personality guy, so I think that's another reason why he got along great with the competitors. And in a way, you had to be that way because you're going to see these people over and over again, and you don't necessarily want to make them your enemy. You just want to beat them, but not necessarily be your enemies. And that's the way they feel. So it's a great, it's almost like a fraternity, being a fraternity.
I think that's pretty much it, unless you wanted to add anything else more about Walt Slavinsky that we haven't talked about, because I know, I mean, he's such a famous name around here. The track's named after him. I've heard many stories about his driving, and his driving was not great, but you mentioned that. But, like, anything else about Walt you want to talk about?
Walt is, I think I mentioned, he would try anything. If he said he wanted us to do this and that, he would actually show you what he wants done. couldn't say, well, I don't know. Right. No, here's doing it and saying this is what we need to do. And then, plus, since he was getting all this material on what's happening around the U.S., in fact, it was worldwide, other athletes are doing, and they say, hey, you can do this because blah, 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 blah. And I said, you get to be a believer. And he was a super, super nice guy.
Next time on the Bates Bobcast, we'll interview another Bobcat from days gone by who made a huge impact at Bates. Find out who next time on the Bates Bobcast. Bates, Bates, my girl, my girl.